Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents King of the Satyrs by Marvin Knight. Narrated by Sean Hardesty. Chapter 1.
Try to focus, Dean said around a mouthful of snacks. Feel the primordial world and bend it to your will. Like bending a lovely elf girl you just met over.
That's more distracting than helpful, Dean, I sighed,
cracking an eye open at my old friend. He tipped his bag of toasted snacks into his mouth, guzzling them down like they were water. Crumbs washed over his cheeks and made a small pile on the ground, before he emptied the bag and dropped it with a mound of others right next to him. Ever since he discovered the Hearthwood had reinvented junk food snacks, he'd filled a bag of holding every time he walked through my city.
I admit cultivation is more a natural thing for me. It's tough to put into words,
Dean shrugged.
I'm not the kind of cultivator who sits cross-legged and explains what he thinks and feels. I just feel what I can do and get it done. That's how I learned space magic. From what I hear, you have primordial aspects to your zeal already, so there's no reason you shouldn't be able to touch on the same thing.
I'd already touched on the primordial aspect of identity. It was one of the powers that had helped me defeat the Time Weaver Queen the last time I'd been in the primordial world, when I went to save Sam and Dean from a horrible fate at the hands of those skin-stealing monsters. Now, their cavern in the distant past was nothing more than an irradiated crater. We'd blown it up with a nuclear bomb. Unfortunately, because time travel always makes a mess, I still had to guard against the spiders even though we'd killed them all. Thankfully, their time and ours weren't entirely unlinked. There was just enough linearity to the connection that I was hopeful I'd never see another Time Weaver again. But if I did, I wanted to hone the power that had been so useful against their queen the last time we'd fought. To that end, I'd recruited Sam and Dean's help. They were old friends of mine, and had been happy to lend a hand. The only trouble came when Anya the Seer, one of Sam's old loves, came off to take him home again. After that, I was certain the two of them had a lot of catching up to do. That left Dean to help me on his own. While Dean was lots of fun out on the town, and plenty handy in a fight, he was a lot less helpful than Sam when it came to practicing cultivation.
Be one with the rock, Theo,
Dean whispered directly into my ear as I held a stone in my hands. The stone was the object of my current experiment. The Time Weaver Queen, who'd mastered the same ability, had been able to transmute one substance into another through mere force of will and the power of identity zeal. After weeks of work, I was fairly certain I'd figured out what that was and what it meant. I should have been able to replicate her ability on my own. Only try as I might, it wasn't working.
Run your hands up the stone's body, feeling every curve. Squeeze and knead it between your fingers. Taste the salt on its surface and imagine what it would be like to brush your lips against it.
I cracked an eye open. I'm thinking your subconscious is telling you to return to the palace. Thank you for your help so far, Dean. Dean sighed and rolled off the boulder he'd been using as a seat, a couch, a bed, and a curling iron, while I meditated in the primordial world.
Yeah, you're probably right. Somebody's gotta stay here and ensure you aren't eaten by some giant Kunpeng while you're meditating. I suppose if you really don't want me cheering you on anymore, I can let you cultivate in privacy for a bit.
Thank you.
Oh, and the key to using these primordial zeals is putting your will behind what you want to do. Don't just imagine it happening. Imagine yourself making it happen,
Dean said as he left. I closed my eyes again as soon as Dean set his mind to building a grill and cooking some hamburgers. To my surprise, his parting words of advice were exactly what I needed. I'd closed my eyes to focus, so I wasn't really sure what had changed or when. But when I opened my eyes again, the stone was a solid sphere of diamond as large as my fist. It worked. I actually did it. I had taken an ordinary rock and imposed my will on it. Through the sheer force of concentration, I had taken what was and replaced it with what I thought it should be. I shot to my feet in giddy excitement. I hadn't been this thrilled with myself since shooting my stone spike spell. I admired the diamond a moment before tossing it into my dimensional storage. I'd show it off later. For now, I wanted to see if I could do it again. so I snatched another stone up from the ground at my feet and set it in my lap. I tried my best to think the same thoughts I'd been pondering before, and sure enough, when I opened my eyes, the rock was the deep yellow of solid gold.
Heavier, too, I muttered as I tossed the gold in my hand.
My earth zeal penetrated it, and I knew it was pure all the way down to the core. A few more tests, and I could perform the feat without closing my eyes. The transformation was gradual at first, like a ripple washing over the surface of a lake. As the ripple passed, the substance behind it changed from what it was to what I wanted it to be. Now, this was real magic. I did find that I was unfortunately limited with what I could make. Minerals were easy, probably because of my earth affinity. Gemstones, too, came naturally, so I could make all the iron I needed now with just a quick trip to the primordial world, or uranium for the reactors, for that matter. Other things were harder. No matter how hard I concentrated on a rock, I couldn't make a butterfly, nor a computer chip, even though the latter should have been possible since I could make crystals of silicone just fine. I thought I was using the wrong source material, so I plucked a few strands of nearby wild grass and tried to change them. No luck. Worse, changing the grass into anything but the grass was incredibly difficult. I couldn't manage to turn it into anything fancy without a lot of effort. After more experimentation, I found the best solution for me was to take the strand of grass, turn it into this plain, mottled gray stone, then turn that into whatever I wanted. Eventually, I turned the strands into a set of solid ruby spikes as long as my arm. Perhaps someone in the Hearthwood could find a use for them. I went to fetch Dean. I found him chopping firewood around the corner with his axe, which was a tough thing in the primordial world. The trees here made what we had back home seem like twigs by comparison. Even a demigod like Dean had to put his back into splitting a log here.
Ready to go? And here I was, setting up the campfire. I thought I'd catch a few fish or something, and we could relive those days you missed while you were napping.
Dean pointed to a few sharpened sticks around the campfire.
Heck, I could even reheat that one I saved for you.
Or we could go back to the Hearthwood and get a proper meal cooked by any number of professional chefs, I said. Let's just head home. My treat. Dean sighed and picked up the logs he'd split for firewood. They would no doubt be some sort of heavenly treasure back on the world of Sanctuary and Serenity, thanks to their incredible strength and exotic powers from growing in the primordial world. But Dean would probably just burn them for firewood. We returned home, and as promised, I treated Dean to lunch. He'd helped me quite a bit lately, and I owed him for everything he'd set into motion for when I eventually emerged from the Wanderer. We had a good time, and I nearly forgot my next appointment of the day. She must have figured out where I was from Mac, because she came to the restaurant and sat down beside us just as Dean finished devouring a massive molten chocolate lava cake. The thing was the size of his body, and yet he ate every bite in minutes and licked the plate clean. I turned to the instructor for my next appointment. She was taller than most elves, and more beautiful, too, though I knew I was biased. Her shining, silvery hair hung straight down her back, contrasting sharply with the tight black outfit she wore halfway between leather armor and a dress. She had a blue sword on one hip, and her full lips were pulled into a smile. "Hello, Tavanna. We won't be much longer," I promised. Dean blinked at his empty plate, frowning. I nudged him, and he turned to look at Tavanna. He broke into a smile as soon as he saw his granddaughter. It was strange to think my friend had a granddaughter. But I'd been asleep for more than 400 years. He and Sam both had legions of descendants that even they barely knew about. Still, I was dreading the day Dean realized just how involved I was with not just one, but two of his descendants.
"If it isn't my perfect, pure, and innocent little granddaughter,"
Dean laughed as he tossed the plate aside and rubbed Tavanna on the head like she was a little girl. The gesture was a little odd on a grown woman, but Tavanna accepted it with all the grace of a well-trained princess.
"It is an honor to see you again, Grandfather. When you return to the capital, please pass along my best wishes to my mother and Captain Amisra."
Tavanna bowed. I wasn't quite sure what the Deanian royal family had worked out for their internal pecking order, but Tavanna was treating him as though he was still the king he was before he left. That would probably work out fine, since I couldn't picture Dean doing any actual ruling. He was more of the delegating kind of king. Truth be told, I suspected his daughter mostly delegated as well. It was a wonder Denia had stayed together as long as it had. I grimaced as Tavanna bid her grandfather goodbye, and didn't feel at ease again until he left for the capital. I didn't dare wrap my arm around Tavanna's waist until he was far outside the borders of the Hearthwood.
Now that your Gramps is finally out of the picture, what do you say you and I spend some quality time together again?
I planted a kiss on her cheek, and she blushed.
Not so fast, Patriarch. Tavanna tapped me on the nose. You have flying practice today?
Ah, can't it wait? At least long enough for you and me to visit some quiet, secluded room with a very durable bed.
Tavanna planted a kiss on my cheek, just as I'd done to her a moment ago. Then she whispered in my ear,
If you can make it work, I'll give you a reward.
Now that, my dear, is a wonderful motivation.
Chapter 2
Tavanna led me on a chase out of the city to one of the nearby northern mountaintops. It was familiar to me since Sam, Dean, and I had played board games here just a short while ago. The slope was too steep to climb, but those of us with flying swords had no trouble getting to the plateau on the top. And that was the crux of the issue, and why we're here today. While I had to ride Spell Eater to the top, Tavanna merely concentrated on her spatial zeal and flew to the top unaided by any external power. That was an ability all sorcerers were supposed to have. All sorcerers except me, it seemed. Try as I might, I just couldn't take to the air without an aid like Spell Eater. With a tool, I was faster than just about anyone else, but without one, I was as ground-bound as any non-magical human.
All right, I want us to fly from this mountaintop to that one, Tavanna said. And if you cheat, you don't get your reward.
I muttered something about having countless secrets elf-kind wasn't meant to know. Tavanna had a soft spot for me, and I knew even if I failed, my consolation prize would probably be just as good as the real reward. But that didn't mean I wasn't going to try my hardest. Being able to fly without any aids was a mark of prestige for those of the sorcerer realm like myself. I needed to be able to take to the air if I wanted to hold my head high at my cultivation level, and that meant being able to fly. Otherwise, I'd be sitting on the ground while a bunch of sorcerers looked down from above. Either that, or I'd need to resort to pulling out Spell Eater. It would look weak, which wouldn't be good for the Hearthwood clan. The trouble was, I was at a natural disadvantage. Some types of zeal were naturally good at flying. Wind or storm zeal users could drift through the clouds at true mage, let alone at sorcerer. They had a natural advantage because of how well their powers were attuned to flight. Even more standard aspects like fire, lightning, water, or blood could take to the air without anything holding them back. Only earth cultivators like myself were truly at a disadvantage. Our powers were all associated with the ground. It wouldn't be too hard to imagine a future where I couldn't fly at all. Tavanna kindly told me it was a common problem for people of my aspect. Perhaps I would have to wait for my mind magic to catch up if I wanted to fly. That aspect didn't have anything special with regard to taking to the air, but it at least wouldn't be holding me back. But I didn't want to wait. I knew earth cultivators could fly. Sorcerers of my aspect had taken to the air before, which meant I would too.
It took some of them until the end of the sorcerer ranks to have the control to manage it, though,
Tavanna protested when I complained aloud to her.
I'm powerful enough to match someone at the end of the sorcerer ranks blow for blow. I should be able to match them in this, too, I grumbled.
Tavanna gave me a warm pat on the back and explained the process again.
For me, I feel the spatial zeal around me. It fills the air, the earth, and the empty void above us all. Then I bend that zeal around me, letting my body become a part of it. To me, it feels as though I am standing still and that the universe is moving around me. Because of that, it takes very little energy for me to hover like this.
She gestured to her heels, which floated a meter off the ground. She drifted around me in a lazy circle while I focused. I had tried her technique step by step myself, but Earth Zeal didn't respond like Spatial Zeal did. I could do exactly as Tavanna was suggesting, if I was flowing through the ground. Her technique described what I did when I used my unearthly movement skill to travel through a ley line. But I couldn't repeat the process above the ground. That was for one simple reason. There was no Earth zeal in the air. How could I reach for the zeal around me when there wasn't any? I shook my head. There had to be another solution. Others had figured this out before. What had they done? Did they take the Earth zeal with them? A bit of experimentation helped me puzzle something out. Like a rocket shooting skyward, I could gather a massive lump of Earth zeal and throw it down behind me to fly. But that process was both tremendously inefficient and energy-intensive. It also provided me with very poor control. Tivana would be able to fly indefinitely at her level, and even though my reserves of zeal were many times larger, I would run out of fuel long before she even began to get tired. And worse, she'd be flying circles around me the entire time. There had to be a better solution. I just wasn't seeing it yet. It was there around the corner. All I needed was one little spark of inspiration. Perhaps throwing out larger chunks of zeal? Or maybe gathering up fistfuls of dirt to anchor the zeal too. Maybe I could capture an Earth aspect monster and force feed it zeal, which I could then extract and throw downward to power my flight while riding it? I tried the first two ideas. The third was a bit too close to how a flying sword really worked. The elves of the last golden age were quite gifted to be able to mass-produce an item that would allow people of any zeal aspect to fly. If not for all the relics of that bygone age left around, flight would have been entirely restricted to wind aspect cultivators and those of the sorcerer realm or above. Without them, I suspected nations like Dinia would be a lot smaller, and local clans would have far greater control over their regions. That flying technique looks a bit clever? Incredibly impressive? I asked, teeth rattling as the continuous explosion of grains of sand at high velocity kept me hovering 15 meters off the ground alongside Tivana, who glided gracefully beside me. I was going to say painful, but I suppose it qualifies as flying if you want your reward now. I let myself drop back down to the ground. I wasn't flying, not really. I was just preventing myself from falling with constant kickback. Being able to fly without help was supposed to look impressive and awe-inspiring. My technique didn't meet those goals. If I flew through the streets of the Hearthwood like that, people would stop and ask me if I was all right. There had to be another way. I spent nearly an hour making attempt after attempt. Many of them worked, but they didn't work the way I wanted them to. The answer was just around the corner, though. I could smell it. Eventually, after going through my list of spells, I came across my gravity manipulation spell. I could make things heavier. Could I do the opposite? It turned out that I could, albeit with a great deal of work and energy to sustain the spell. The trouble came from my momentum, though. I was too heavy to change directions easily. As it stood, I was like a flying mountain compressed into the shape of a man. I'd need a kilometer just to turn. I was heavy thanks to my body cultivation. A world titan fiend body had made me denser than any human body should have been, almost like every gram of flesh in me contained 10 times the mass it should have. I wasn't entirely sure how it worked, but it certainly made surviving lethal blows a lot easier. If someone shot me with a gun to the face, I was confident the bullets would bounce right off my eyeballs with scarcely more than a tickle. And even if they did hurt me, I'd healed from having a hole in my chest the size of my fist where my heart should have been. A bad blow to the skull would probably just have me feeling punch drunk for a few hours. The worst effect would be memory loss. I thought those powers came with the unfortunate downside of making it much harder to fly. But what if I could negate that entirely? Else, I could turn stone into diamonds or gold. What if I just told the universe I wanted the benefits of being as dense as I was, but none of the downsides? I'm going to need a minute, I told Tivana as I sat down cross-legged. Would this be easier in the primordial world? Possibly. But at the same time, the body of a living being was like a universe unto itself. The magic inside of me was mine, filled with the vitality of my own creation. I was the supreme god within my body, and my will was as mighty as the force of gravity. And so I reached inside myself and made one tiny change. My mass would be 1/10 of what it was, but nothing else would change. Why? Because I said so, that's why. And my body obeyed. I felt the weight like a heavy burden lifting off my shoulders. I hadn't even realized how deeply I'd been sinking into the ground beneath me. The weight had come on gradually over time, so I didn't even realize I'd been putting it on. I suppose that was how this kind of thing usually went, and chuckled to myself. Tavanna frowned at me, tightening her brows as she tried to figure out what I'd just done.
"You're flying much smoother now," Tavanna said. "How? I'm not seeing any change to your technique."
"I took what is and what should be and switched them," I said, voice smug. That would make little sense to her, but she'd let me live in mystery long enough that it was about time I repaid the favor.
"Not going to tell me?" Tavanna pouted.
"It's a grand unlock the mysteries of the universe sort of deal.
Tell you what, though, if you can beat me in a race, I will give away all the mystique and explain it to you right away.
If you fail, then you'll have to wait for the next time I'm feeling like sharing my secrets."
"And what do you get if you win?" Tavanna asked.
"If I win, then you are mine until dawn rises tomorrow." I reached to brush a strand of hair out of her eyes, leaning close as I did so to cup her chin in my hands and tilt her head up so her eyes met mine. "I get to do whatever I want to you, and you'll be my obedient little pet princess." Tavanna blushed, and she shifted from heel to heel. The gesture looked odd, given that the two of us were hovering in the air. Biting her lip and staring back at me, she nodded.
"Oh, all right. It's a deal."
"Fantastic. Race you to the myriad monsters' sea. Ready, set, go!" I took off like a rocket, and Tavanna was left far behind before she realized I'd even started. With my mass reduced, my immense strength was even more apparent. I sprung off my heels with the force of a, well, I couldn't quite think of anything that matched the kind of acceleration I could put myself through when exerting my full power. I did know that the side of the mountain shattered as I sprung off it, and they probably felt the tremors through the hearthwood. I wasn't too worried. Mac had long since worked to stabilize the city against earthquakes. He had to when we had an earth cultivator as powerful as me hanging around. The kind of speed I hit was on a scale high enough to get into orbit, which was exactly what I did. I broke the sound barrier several times over as I shot upward, and the atmosphere thinned into nothing. The world of sanctuary and serenity sprawled out before me like a map, and I spotted the finish line. Tavanna was left far behind before she realized I'd even started. I sensed space shift behind me and knew she was doing her best to catch up. I spotted a spatial distortion beneath me as she raced east. I wasn't quite sure how her spatial flight skill worked, but I knew mine would be best if I got rid of that pesky air friction, hence heading so far upward. At the apex of my flight, I reached into myself, like flipping a lever I'd already changed. I manipulated my mass again, as well as my gravity spell. My mass became 10 times what it was unaltered, and the force of gravity pulled on me 100 times greater than it should have. Between the two, I descended with 1,000 times the force I should have. The air hissed around me as I re-entered the atmosphere. The threads on my clothes burned from the friction and shot flames behind me, but my body was too tough to be harmed by a little heat. I pointed the tops of my shoes downward and held my hands crossed against my chest as I tried to make myself as streamlined as possible. The ground approached with tremendous speed, but I could see Tavanna nearing the destination. She was skimming across the Sokaku clan orchards, now under the management of the Hearthwood clan. But she was too slow. I quickly changed my mass again to lighten myself and reversed the pull of gravity, but this was the first time I'd done something like this. I underestimated the amount of energy I'd built up in my fall, and was only able to slow myself down a little. Fortunately, I was headed for the water in the myriad monsters' sea, so I wouldn't be hurting the orchards Tavanna was crossing over to the west. With a tremendous splash, I sank into the sea. In this region, the water turned deep just a few kilometers from the coast, and I sank and sank all the way to the bottom. Given my speed, I quickly sank so deep that not a speck of light from the surface reached the ocean floor. Strange monsters roamed around me, and when I finally struck the bottom, I kicked up so much silt and dust that the water turned cloudy all around. A few small monsters who didn't know what was good for them tried to take a taste of me, but even though I couldn't see, my senses were keen enough that I could tell what was in the water around me from feel and sound alone. I brushed them aside, then urged all the sand in the water to settle quickly. Then I stepped into the nearest ley line headed in the direction of the coast. I emerged by the beach just as Tavanna touched down.
I win, I declared.
You're naked, Tavanna gestured to me. She was right. My clothes had burned on re-entry.
I still won. Besides, this saves time getting undressed. After all, you're mine until next dawn.
I grinned from cheek to cheek. Tavanna let out a laugh.
I suppose I am. So how can the Crown Princess of Denia serve you, Patriarch of the Hearthwood Clan?
How about you join me for a romantic stroll through the solar system? I asked. I flew the two of us out of the atmosphere again, though this time at a much more sedate pace. Once in space, Tavanna flew on her own beside me, though I kept my arm wrapped tight around her. After a few minutes, though, it became apparent that her method of flight worked just as well in space as it did on the surface of a planet, so I didn't have to worry. She wasn't nearly as fast as me, though, which meant a flight to a nearby celestial body would have taken her at least a month, even as close as they could be in the 10,000 worlds. Other planets sometimes got close enough that they filled a quarter of the sky on the world of Sanctuary and Serenity, which put them near enough that the atmospheres started to mingle. That was how early orcs and elves flew between worlds to visit one another. In any ordinary solar system, all these planets would have crashed into each other long ago and formed a handful of superplanets too massive to contain life. But there was magic at work here, adjusting orbits day by day to keep all the countless worlds in motion and prevent them from colliding with one another too often. And enough civilizations had the means to clear out spatial debris that the space between planets was largely empty. That was a good thing, since it meant I could really push my new flying spell to its absolute limits. Tavanna glared at me when she realized we were headed for another planet and realized what I was doing. She was mine until dawn, but it just so happened that I'd chosen to explore a planet that was tidally locked to its closest sun. Dawn would never come. To my surprise, the planet seemed habitable, at least in the zone locked in the twilight between night and day. There was an atmosphere. Admittedly, it smelled like a dark, dank basement full of rotting eggs instead of the healthy, fresh air I was used to, but it existed. That meant Tavanna could finally take a breath again and talk.
You cheetah!
I chuckled. Not so fast, my little princess. I only want to hear compliments from you. You're mine, remember?
You have cleverly and deviously outwitted me again, Theo.
Tavanna rolled her eyes. Better. Now let's go find somewhere with a view. I found a place overlooking a sprawling ocean of pure quicksilver, as vast as the eyes could see. It was what had caught my eye about this planet in the first place when looking at it from afar. It had been near enough to the world of Sanctuary and Serenity that I could see our planet's reflection on the surface of this lake.
Beautiful, Tavanna muttered as we both took in the view.
And highly toxic. I wouldn't recommend breathing any more than necessary. In fact, I imagine just being here would kill anyone beneath the wizard rank in a few hours. We should be fine for a short stay.
And here I thought you were going to keep me here forever as your pet princess, Tavanna teased.
Keep tempting me, and I just might. There are 10,000 worlds to visit after all.
With a wave of my hand, a plush blanket from my dimensional storage covered the clifftop, and I tore off what remained of Tavanna's clothes. They'd worn thin in our flight out of the world of Sanctuary and Serenity, and again with our entry to this world. The threads came apart in my hands as easily as dry straw. Soon, Tavanna's bare, bountiful, and beautiful bosom bounced before me. My fingers roamed her chest, toying with her breasts and nipples. I gently pushed her down to the sheet I'd laid out for the two of us, and she lay back and closed her eyes. I explored her body, as I'd done several times so far. But today I had something special in mind. I'd be the first to admit that I liked to spice things up a little in the bedroom. With as much sex as I had, I needed a little variety. Vanilla ice cream is great, but sometimes you want sprinkles, and sometimes you want chocolate fudge. Me? I found there was nothing sweeter than a desperately horny elf begging her patriarch to do whatever he wanted to her. When Tavanna's mother had ordered her daughter to make grandchildren with me, Tavanna had been completely inexperienced in the bedroom. She was a fainting, blushing maiden who would have been modest back on Earth, let alone here among elves. The elves of the world of Sanctuary and Serenity were primarily female, so many of them walked about nearly naked all the time without a care in the world.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?